Now, before we get into Eisenhower's apparent meeting with extraterrestrials, let's talk a little bit about what you had mentioned earlier, and that was witnesses and whistleblowers who might have had a little more information about this apparent meeting, if you could.
Sure. Well, the witnesses are people who were actually there at the meeting, were involved in some way in terms of being in some official capacity there at Edwards Air Force Base, and who could see parts of what was happening. And then you have the whistleblowers, people who have seen documents within the U.S. military, highly classified documents that discussed the meetings with extraterrestrials, discussed the actual agreements that were eventually reached with extraterrestrial races. And you also have statements or the documents discussing different extraterrestrial races. So we're talking about more than one race here.
That we were in contact with?
That were involved in this whole period, and that the meeting that President Eisenhower had was with one particular race, and I believe, based on the testimonies, that there were agreements reached with another extraterrestrial race.
Huh. Now, the names of witnesses and whistleblowers, let me throw out some names and you tell me what you think their involvement was. There was a Commander Suggs. Who was he?
Well, he was in the Navy, and he was there at the meeting. He communicated this to his son, who was a Marine sergeant, many years after the actual event, after 1954. So, I mean, he kept the secret to his grave, basically, and the only person that we know that he told was his son, who was himself in the U.S. Marines. And his son basically related that Commander Suggs was present at the meeting, saw two extraterrestrials, two tall, Nordic-looking extraterrestrials with blonde hair, blue eyes, actually meeting with President Eisenhower, that the first of the extraterrestrials, the spokesperson, kept a certain distance from President Eisenhower. You know, for whatever reason, there had to be a certain distance maintained, and that there was a communication going on.
And they were human-like, I guess, if you say Nordic, pretty similar to human beings generally.
Basically, that's right, yes. These are Nordic humanoids, extraterrestrials who, to all intents and purposes, could pass off as humans, other than being very tall and also having a quality that is quite striking. Bob Dean, in discussing the NATO assessment that looked at the possibilities of extraterrestrials threatening the national security of the U.S. or threatening NATO in some way, discussed that there were at least four extraterrestrial races, and that one of these races were this Nordic-looking humanoid race.
John Lear, former Lockheed L-1011 captain, his father was the creator of the Learjet, William Lear. John Lear, of course, developing a close relationship with then CIA director William Colby, who was in charge of a number of covert operations at that time in Vietnam before becoming the director. Was he a whistleblower at this time? John, of course, was on with Art a few months ago, a very credible person, very knowledgeable about this field.
Well, he's a very interesting person. I mean, his father, of course, had very high-level contacts. I mean, we're talking of William Lear, someone who had contacts at the very highest level and would, in my opinion, have known very early on about the extraterrestrial presence. Donald Kehoe, who wrote some of those very important first books on extraterrestrials, had himself high-level contacts and was able to get directly from the mouth of U.S. admirals and generals that these extraterrestrials or these flying saucers were very real and that they were interplanetary in nature. I think William Lear would have had better context than Donald Kehoe, so I think that William Lear would have known about the presence, would have actually probably even played a role as an advisor, and I guess he would have passed some of this information on to his son. Of course, John Lear himself did work in as a CIA asset in terms of flying craft that were part of CIA operations.
I think he was a contract pilot for the CIA, wasn't he?
That's correct, yes. And he established a friendship with William Colby, who really is, as far as our CIA directors goes, one of the good guys. He appears to be one of these rare CIA directors who really was concerned about what the CIA was up to, or at the very least was concerned to get the information out to the general public about exactly what was happening. And it's very likely that he would have known also that William Colby would have known about the ET presence and would have known something about these early meetings involving the Eisenhower administration. And so John Lear may have gotten this information from that too. So he didn't actually say where he got the information from, but it certainly was very high level, and so we might see John Lear in that whistleblower capacity.
This relationship with the extraterrestrials, Michael, was this based on them trying to tell us something? Were we in any immediate danger because of another alien race? What was the basis for why this meeting even occurred?
Well, that's a great question, George. The issue that the Nordic extraterrestrials placed before the Eisenhower administration, based on the testimonies of the whistleblowers and of witnesses, is that there was in fact another extraterrestrial race, or maybe more than one race, actually trying to establish some relationship that posed a long-term threat to the security of not only the United States but of humanity. And so this particular Nordic race of extraterrestrials were really there to do a number of things. One was to give a warning about what it was that was shortly to come into the come to the attention of the U.S. That is another extraterrestrial race that was probably more inclined to do deals that would in some way trap U.S. policymakers in a set of policies that would be difficult to extricate mm-hmm. themselves from. Also, this Nordic extraterrestrial race, based on the testimonies, were very concerned about the way in which nuclear technology was being spread, being deployed, and were intent on trying to persuade the Eisenhower administration to simply give them up.